It was back in the late spring of 1968 that a man by the name of Dick Prenicky left civilization behind to carve out a new life in the remote Alaskan wilderness. During his first year alone, Dick would cut trees and build a log cabin and make what was needed from materials available. He would document his adventure through written journals and on film. Thousands have had such dreams, but Dick Prenicky lived them. Now, with more journal entries and never-before-seen footage, we revisit Dick's Alaskan paradise. Join us now for part two, the continuing story of Alone in the Wilderness.
I had made it through my first year living alone in the wilderness. My little cabin had kept me warm and comfortable. With the arrival of spring, it felt good to get back to work again. I must restock the lumber yard, for I had cash building on my mind, something I had thought about all winter long. I think it will be the answer to keeping those critters out of my food supply. Folks say that axemanship is a lost art, but I like to think I've found it again in these cool spruce woods. The pull of the packboard straps felt comfortable against my woolen shirt, and I could feel the warmth of the spring sun on my face. It was real bull work, but I never felt any better. I wondered if there was anyone in the world as free and happy as I was. I would spend the rest of the afternoon ripping boards from my well-seasoned logs. I would need 7 or 8 to provide me with a solid and level foundation for the cache building. With 6 boards ripped, it was time to take a break. I would see if I could catch a fish for supper. In the last few days, Hope Creek has eaten a big opening into the lake ice. I could see the pool of open water growing before my eyes. A pair of harlequin ducks swam out from shore as I passed by and began talking to me. I worked a metal spoon deep into the current, jerked it toward me, and let it drift back. Not a strike after several casts, then a snag, then it moved. I knew I had a fish, a 15-inch grayling, enough for my needs. A few sticks of wood on the coals and I would be back in business again. The little stove that Brother Jake built is good company and works well. The proof of a good stove is in the heating, and this one is amazing. Very little fire, but it keeps my water boiling in the kettle. For my supper tonight, it would be fried trout and a batch of biscuits, made from the sourdough starter that Mary Allsworth had given me last spring. It's hard to believe it's been 1 year ago today that Babe brought me here to Twin Lakes in the little tea craft. I remember it was a beautiful day, and we had sat and talked on the gravel bar at the upper end of the lower lake. I had backpacked 2 loads that day to Spike's cabin. And I had even picked up a sunburn from the sun on the snow. It was the first day of what I believe has been the most interesting year of my life. While waiting for my biscuits to raise, I will catch up on my journals and a few overdue letters to send back home. Tomorrow just might be a good day to prepare for the cache building. I had many poles to cut and peel today before the cache construction begins. I had cut many of them last November on the far side of Hope Creek. They had been seasoning all this time. I had cut 4 other heavier logs about 15 feet long. These would be my stilts to hold the cache aloft. I finished the post holes and set in the big stilts. Like the fireplace and cabin, I can see the cache up on the poles already. The first course of logs was notched and nailed to my foundation planks. I cut notches for 4 stringers and hewed the stringers to fit. The logs fit snugly into their custom-made notches, 30 in place. The cache is now 29 inches high. Now for some roof poles. Everything has a good snug fit down here on the ground. I hope it goes together with no trouble when I climb the ladder with all the pieces. It's May 18th. Strange to wake up before 3 in the morning and feel that daylight is being wasted. This is Red Runt's country, and I am the invader. And hardly a day passes that he does not remind me of this with his chatter. It's good to see bears on the mountain again. I spotted a big blonde bear, and then another chocolate color, and another, until there were 3 standing half as tall as their mother. Cubs, but not this year's. I studied them through the 60-power eyepiece and finally talked myself out of climbing up there to see them at close range. I had a cache to build. I went to the woodshed and ripped out planks for the door frame and some 1.5-inch planks for the door. I then cut 2 sets of hinges out of a stump of wood. I was ready to take my little house apart and put it back together again on top of its 9-foot stilts. I used my meat pole ladder for a scaffold. Soon, number 1 log was resting atop the stilts. The logs fit perfectly. 40-penny spikes went into the heavy ends and 16 pennies into the small ends. Next, the door. All that remained was to cut the logs in between, and I had an opening for the door. I finished off the roof with tar paper and a good layer of moss. I am really proud of that piece of work. For all practical purposes, my miniature cabin on stilts was complete. Today, I had better check the lake ice, for I've been expecting Babe in with supplies any day now. And I would hate to see him sink out of sight. He once said to me, when the ice is safe for landing, put the oil drum out on the ice. So I did. 10 weeks later, he came in and asked, why the oil drum on the ice? He has a good memory, but it isn't very long. The ice was still 32 inches thick, so I formed a huge OK, so Babe could easily see it from the air. Today, I would take a hike up country. My pack made up and lashed on the GI pack frame. Along with the Bolex and heavy tripod, I packed 500 feet of film, some smoked fish, and the big pistol. Around 40 pounds, I would guess. I was away by 7:30. Past Bell's Point and up the lake, I spotted the rear half of a moose sticking out from a spruce. A big old cow. And she made no effort to leave, even though I was no more than 100 yards. Hiding in the brush was a new calf, and I just had to try for pictures of that cute little guy. I kept trees in mind that I could get behind, just in case the mother got ornery. Just how much would she put up with? Then the hackles from ears to shoulders stood on end. And here she came, ears back and nostrils flared. At 15 feet, she whirled past me and trotted back to the calf, bawling as she went. That was enough to get my heart pumping. I figured it was a good time to be moving on. Lots of loose rock, so it was slow climbing. When I came to the edge of a big basin and peeked over the edge, 3 full curl rams were staring back at me. They had me pegged. They were in their chosen isolation, wild mountain dandies, living high off the grass and far away from the women and kids, and well out of reach from the wolves. They watched me as if they were surprised to see something else as high up on the mountain as they were. The whining sound of the Bolex seemed to make them nervous, and they disappeared up and over the ridge with ease. What a view from up here. Rugged mountains as far as I could see, and many glaciers. I walked the ridge to keep warm and to look for more game. To see animals, you must move a little and look a lot. I came to a good view of Allen Mountain, so I stopped to glass it for a bear. Right away, I saw something not right. And with the binoculars, I saw it was a bear, all right. Not far away were 2 little cubs. A good-looking sow grizzly with twins. The cubs romped and chased each other without a care in the world, while Mom constantly had her nose in the air, always on the lookout for danger. Nothing will make a grizzly leave the country faster than the scent of a man. Now, if only she would stick around all summer. I had wandered a long way from the cabin today. My pedometer read 22 miles. It was time to head home. I shouldered my pack and headed down. Today, I feel like a man inspired by a sermon that came to me firsthand. that came out of the sky and the many moods of the mountains. My left foot was getting sore, so I stopped and pulled off my boots and socks and buried my tired feet in the snow for a few minutes. Cold for just a little while will make your feet good for many more miles. The caribou seem content today and show no fear of me. I wonder what he thinks about. Is his brain just a blank as he lies there blinking in the sun and chewing his cud? I wonder if he feels as I do, that this small part of the world is enough to think about. I was home and would sleep good tonight. My gear put away and my starving birds fed. It had been a pretty good day. My ladder project had priority today, and before I finished, it started to snow. Surely just a shower. I used a perfect well-seasoned pole, ripped it down the center, and put my ladder together with the flat sides in. The steps were short logs, flat side up and level. A ladder a man could walk up instead of climb. There was 4 inches on the ground when it finally stopped. Hopefully, this was the last good snow of spring. The cloud cover broke and a big blue spot opened up in the sky. And the sun feels good on my face. A good day to do some tin bending. I have surprised myself with what I could make with simple tools when a definite need arose. And my need today was a new pan to heat water on the stove with. My old one is now starting to show a bit of rust. I have made all kinds of things from empty fuel cans. It seems that I always have a good stockpile of them in the woodshed. Bush pilots have discarded many over the years. And like they say, one man's trash is another man's treasure. I don't think a man knows what he actually can do until he's challenged. I do think a man has missed a very deep feeling of satisfaction if he has never created something, or at least completed something with his own two hands. We have grown accustomed to work on pieces and parts of things, instead of taking things to completion. The emphasis seems to be on teamwork. Now, I realize that man working together can perform miracles, such as sending a man to walk on the surface of the moon. And there is definitely a need and place for teamwork. I would be the last to argue that point. We need each other, but nevertheless in a jam. The best friend you have is yourself. It is always a pleasure to see what you can make instead of buying it all packaged up and ready-made. My problem now is where to store it all. Today, I would take an overnight tour down country. And with the ice still in good shape, I would sled my gear rather than carry it on my back. I followed close to shore so as not to disturb the caribou any more than I had to. Yet something else was making them uneasy. Opposite the den opening were grizzly bear tracks and droppings. All old, and I felt certain the bear was gone. With pistol in hand, I crawled inside for a closer inspection. Inside, I found the bear's hibernation plug. Something I had only heard about from the old-timers. The large black plug was made up of dried grass, twigs, and hair. It was Mother Nature's way of blocking up the back door of the bear's digestive system during his long 6 months sleep. I figured the bear must be close by, and it wasn't long before I spotted him in the brush below. He acted like a bear looking for caribou calves. When he dropped out of sight, I followed. Maybe this was a foolish thing to do. The evidence showed this bear had already killed and consumed at least one unlucky caribou this season. No better company in the wilderness than a campfire. Very comforting. It is surprising how comfortable a bedroll on the ground can be after you've come down off a mountain. I was on the home stretch now and had the cabin in sight. On the trail stood a brand new bear bit tree, hair rubbed into the bark and 7 feet above. More destruction of wood than I have seen in a long time. This was no ordinary Alaskan brown bear. Was the message meant for another bear, or was it for me? I will have to watch out for that guy. It would be an early dinner, a fireweed salad, and the last of my caribou meat fried in a well-salted skillet topped with onions. And of course, a batch of fresh-baked sourdough biscuits. I was proud of my cabin and cash. The actual cash layout was just a shade over $40, and that included the window that Babe had flown in. Although it was small at 11 by 14 feet, it was cozy and big enough for my needs. Everything seems to find its place. However, if I continue to collect souvenirs on my travels, I will need more mantel space. The fireplace really adds character to my little cabin and is good company in the winter. A Twin Lakes holiday. Babe had made a mail drop while I was away down country. Many letters to read and some very good books from my good friend Roy Allen. And good news from Brother Jake. The J3 Cub is ready to fly, and he will be here for a visit in August. The rest of my day would be spent bringing my journals up to date. As I glanced up from my writing, a cow moose and her good-looking calf strolled past on the beach. I do believe it's the same cow that was so unfriendly a few weeks ago. Life is so uncomplicated here at Twin Lakes. It is now June 13th, and the great ice chunks are moving past at the rate of 50 feet per minute. Last year, the lake was not ice-free until the 26th of June. I wonder, does the lake ice melt from the top down or the bottom up? Now, after 6.5 months, the mountains will be able to see themselves in the mirror again. I would celebrate the ice breakup today with a trip down lake. A pretty good breeze going down, but that was okay. Anything below the white cap stage is good. The wind fared up a bit after beaching, I left the beach and climbed to the edge of the timber to get a better look at a fine caribou bull I had spotted from the canoe. He looked to be in prime shape. A trophy hunter would leave his wife for a head like that. I do hope that old boy makes it through the hunting season. It was a warm day, and I can hear the many waterfalls in the distance. I do believe the lake level will rise today. It was very buggy down low, but very few bugs up here. The good breeze gives me some relief from those pesky mosquitoes and white sox. It is a world of beauty at Twin Lakes. As I rounded a brush point, there sat a fox at the edge of the brush. It was a mother standing guard over three pups. Like the bear cubs, fox pups are very different from one another. Some like to get out and explore. Others prefer to stay close to the den. I sat and watched them play for more than an hour and exposed 145 feet of film. It was time to be moving on. I was a long way from home. Emerson Creek was running a lot of water today. I couldn't help myself. I just had to stop and waste a few shots with the camera. So much beauty all around me. A near calm lake as I shoved off. It is always enjoyable to run the connecting stream between the lakes. How many times have I wished the scenery would go by that fast on a calm lake? A lone young moose appeared in the pond next to the stream on the left-hand side of my canoe. I cruised down, wondering just how close I could get. I thought it odd that this little guy was all alone. Where was his mother? Curiosity got the best of me. Still no sign of the calf's mother along the stream. I wondered if I had an orphan. The first calm cove I came to, I beached the canoe and packed the Bolex and tripod to high ground above the pond. As I reloaded the camera, a young bull waded in, but still no sign of the cow. Then up the stream bank came the little guy limping along. The calf's right front leg had a big patch of white below the knees. Quills. There must have been 100 of them. The culprit was not far away. How could something so cute cause so much pain? The calf had picked the wrong one to mess with. With the help of my walking stick, I encouraged the porcupine to move on, just in case the little calf had not learned his lesson. If only the calf had left that porcupine alone. Now it will have one very sore leg to go with its problem of making a living without milk, and a wise mother to teach it the do's and don'ts of the very cruel world that nature is. I will have to come back and check on the calf. I very much doubt that it will survive until winter. There was a good breeze blowing up the lake, and soon I was among the whitecaps and really sailing. It would be a fast trip home. An hour and 10 minutes found me at my beach. It was good to see my cabin again. With my gear packed in and a fire going, I packed and labeled a good batch of exposed film for Brother Jake. I expect Babe should be flying in any day now. I was weary, but not too weary to go down to Hope Creek to see if I could catch a fish to go along with my beans. After a few casts, one grabbed the lure. I worked him in slowly and carefully. I didn't want to lose this one. This business of fishing can turn serious pretty quick when a man is hungry. I've learned something from the big game animals. Their food is pretty much the same day to day. And I don't vary my fare too much either. Food is fuel, and the best fuel I've found is oatmeal, beans, and fresh fish, and a caribou or porcupine stew once in a while. I just season simple food with hunger, and I've never felt better in my life. There is nothing better than a fresh-caught grayling fried in bacon grease. The rest of my evening would be spent catching up on my journals. It was 8 o'clock when I turned out the lantern. I just knew I would sleep good tonight. That 4 inches of foam rubber under me never felt so good. I slept as if I had died last night. The cabin was still warm and the coals in the stove were still glowing. For breakfast, it would be a good stack of hotcakes, topped with last year's preserves. One of these days, I must take a hike up to the Calgill bench to see how the blueberry crop is faring up. They should be ripening up about now. With the dishes washed and my welfare birds fed, I had a notion to paddle down to the lower end again. The flat water looked inviting, so I packed the necessary gear to the beach. A beautiful, quiet morning for the trip. The only sound on the lake was my paddle and a few distant waterfalls. I was making good time. 1 hour later, I had made it to the lower end of the lake and was coasting down the connecting stream when I surprised a very large mother brown bear. The stream bank blocked my full view of her on the marshy flat, but surely she must have a cub or two hidden in the brush. It was clear to me that she was irritated. So I kept the canoe well centered in the stream, just in case she came back to have a talk with me. The mosquitoes were affectionate today when I beached the canoe, on up to my climb-out point, and from there it was perfect hiking country. The waterfalls had really come to life since the warm weather had arrived, and Emerson Falls was as pretty as I have ever seen it. If there was gold in this creek, the nuggets would be found in the deep, clear pools. I think that the real question is not whether is there gold in the creek, but just how do I go about shutting the water off? The red salmon were active in the creek today, a sure sign that fall was on its way. How far had they come since leaving saltwater near Dillingham? According to the map, probably more than 250 miles. On the opposite side of the creek was a sow and her good-looking cub. I walked gently and watched her closely. I had told myself, don't surprise her, and she will probably take her cub and go. I have heard the people who claim to know say, she isn't likely to harm you unless her cubs are in danger or thinks they are in danger. I think what she thinks is the determining factor. What I think doesn't count. I already had one bear that was upset with me today, and I didn't need another. On this very calm day, instead of towing the canoe the half mile upstream to the upper lake, I would carry it. With the canoe well balanced on my shoulders and no wind, the chore seemed easy enough. I think the old girl was pleased to see me move on. I I do believe that carrying the canoe is the best way up the connecting stream. Providing, of course, the wind isn't blowing. Not a riffle on the lake. It will be a pleasant paddle home. Hot cakes for breakfast, and the sky was clearing. Today would be a blueberry picking day. Across Hope Creek Bridge, and then I would head up the trail to the Cowgill Berry Patch. Hopefully the bears had not beat me to it. I would need a good supply to see me through the winter. In just a few weeks, the bull moose and caribou will be rubbing that soft velvet free from their antlers. I found a real good patch, and the berries were large and sweet. I was anxious to try out my new berry picking machine that I had made. In no time at all, I had picked a gallon and hardly raised from my knees. With a good supply on hand, I would have to send some to Mary next time Babe flies in. A young and very curious bull caribou was good company while I picked. I think he was impressed with that new picking machine. I had filled almost three cans when I heard a small plane. I didn't want to get too excited yet, but could it be Brother Jake? I had almost given up on seeing him fly in. But when the little plane turned, I could see that it was a yellow J3 Cub. This was the nicest thing that has happened at Twin Lakes for a long time. I told him that I had given up and expected that he had junked the remains and hitchhiked back to California.
It was in the late summer that Dick's brother Raymond, better known as Jake, would fly his rebuilt J3 Piper Cub airplane solo well over 2,000 miles from California to Alaska and then into the remote wilderness of Twin Lakes country. Raymond would then spend the next month with Dick at his cabin and experience wilderness living firsthand. Along with as much fresh food supplies as the little plane could carry, Raymond would surprise Dick with a 16-millimeter wind-up Bolex camera. Later on, it would prove to be Dick's most important and valued possession. The camera would allow Dick to continue to document his lifestyle and travels in this one-man wilderness. The little two-seat airplane, the Arctic Tern, would provide a new and exciting way for the brothers to explore the far reaches of this remote wilderness, a region that otherwise would be difficult, if not impossible, to travel by foot. When weather permitted, the Prenicke brothers would fly off into the unknown, taking turns at the controls. The vast wilderness that surrounded Twin Lakes offered countless rivers and valleys to explore, and the Prenicke brothers wanted to see it all. What used to take Dick days to hike on foot could now be covered in minutes. They were now enjoying something that they had only dreamed of as boys growing up in the flat country of Iowa. They were living that dream and exploring the Alaskan wilderness in their own plane and together. On occasion, when the lack of daylight or unflyable weather prevented their return to the comfort of Dick's cabin, Ray and Dick would welcome an excuse to make camp and sleep out under the stars on the shores of a remote lake in the middle of nowhere. They would always manage to catch something, cook it, and simply enjoy each other's company. Ray would soon say goodbye to Dick and fly back home to California. Yet the brothers would remain close through countless letters. This bond would continue over the next 30 years.
On this fine October morning, Jake was on his way back to California, and I was alone in the wilderness again. I took my gold pan and shovel and headed up the creek, high up on the gorge where bedrock is very near the surface. The gold should be here. Right away, I found a good flake lying in plain sight. Very seldom is it this easy. Gold is not hard to recognize. The first time that you see it, you will know that it is gold. The rest of the morning, I washed lots of gravel and cleaned moss. I have found the moss that grows on the bottom of the rocks in the stream is a good collector of fine gold. The water was very cold, and that leaky boot didn't help things. With gold now up to $35 an ounce, I could add a few things to the grocery list. I do hope Brother Jake enjoyed my cooking. Said he couldn't decide whether my spicy porcupine stew tasted like Iowa rabbit or squirrel. With a good kettle of beans bubbling on the stove, I would spend the rest of this very warm day carving out a big wooden spoon for Mary in exchange for all those cookies she sends me. I dug out a good-looking stump and went to work. The camp robbers kept me company. Nature provides so many things, if one has the eye to notice them. It is always a pleasure to see what you can make instead of buying it ready-made. Here at Twin Lakes, I have learned patience, learned to take my time and try to do the job right by figuring it out first. No sense to rush it and go off half-cocked. There's plenty of time out here. Hours later, I had a spoon, a good one for dipping batter, a bit more sanding, and it would be ready for a coat of shellac. I do hope that Mary likes it. Learn to use an axe and respect it, and you can't help but love it. But abuse one, and it will wear your hands raw and open your foot like an overcooked sausage. I enjoy working for my heat. It seems to make my food taste better. It's the end of October now, and the good weather is still holding. But all signs tell me that winter is not far away. The bears are working overtime now, bulking up on berries, preparing themselves for that long winter sleep. In just a few short weeks, this bear will disappear into the mountain, and I will not see him again for 6 months. I will miss his company. The fall season at Twin Lakes is the pretty one, but always too short. The blueberry leaves fall at the touch now. I could not help but waste some film on these two fine-looking caribou bulls before heading back to the cabin. I am happy to see that they have survived another hunting season. A stiff breeze and some big waves. It's as rough as I have seen it. I think a change is coming. Now at 7:30, it has stopped snowing. A fresh coat of shellac, and the webs looked ready for miles of trail. I could see the big bear from my cabin door. It appeared to me that he was searching for a den site. The question is, would he use the same den as last year, or would he dig a new one? Dead calm and 6 degrees. As cold and still as it is, the water has now become too thick to stir with a paddle. The canoe looks out of place on the beach with so much snow. It will do me no good now. So I towed it up to the point and wrestled it into Spike's cabin. A tight squeeze, but at least it was covered. An ideal day to work at my wood supply. Making wood is never a waste of time in cold weather. The dead tree was a good one, not completely dry, which is better for holding fire. The little pumpkin seed sled that I found floating in the lake last spring has proved to be a very valuable find and was making this job a real pleasure. Six good sled loads when I got it all to the woodshed, and it began to snow again. There's nothing like watching a real wilderness storm from the window of a snug little cabin. With all this snow, I can't help but wonder about the sheep on the mountain. It must take a lot of digging for very little feed. Really a beautiful sight this morning. It must have snowed all night, as there was 12 inches of new snow to shovel from my paths. Today I must go down lake to check for tracks. I tried to make a sneak on a good bunch of caribou for some close-up pictures. A sudden shift in the wind, and it was the beginning of the end. A spooky old cow must have cried wolf. I was nearly to Glacier Creek when I spotted sheep tracks in the snow. Two young rams kept their eye on me as I made my way up the canyon. The going was easy enough without the webs. The snow got deeper, but not so much a problem with the coarse rock under the snow to give me traction. Further up the creek, I saw ravens flying. A bad sign. I hadn't climbed far when I saw the spot of red up on the slope. One animal had died, so another could live. The tracks told me that the wolverine had been first at the scene. The glutton had eaten his fill and would certainly return for another meal. I could see just how it happened. A snowslide had caught the unsuspecting ram and carried him over the edge and onto the rocks below. I have often thought to myself about getting caught in a snowslide or falling from a rock face. If that happened, I would probably perish on the mountain in much the same way that the old ram did. I would be long gone before anyone found me. My only wish would be that folks wouldn't spend a lot of time searching. When the time comes for a man to look his maker in the eye, where better place could the meeting be held than in the wilderness?
To order a copy of this program, please call this toll-free number or visit our website at www.aloneinthewilderness.com.